Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
He's a 35-year veteran performer and has done shows all over the world. Not only is he a stellar ventriloquist, he's authored the landmark books Kid Show Ventriloquism and Audience Participation and Ad-Libbing for Success, a lecturer on the subject of entertaining kids, and an internationally known columnist for entertainment journals in the U.S., Germany, and the United Kingdom. Variety Artist, I give you Mark Wade.
Hey, John, good to be with you today.
How's it going, Mark?
Hey, doing great, buddy, doing great. Glad to be able to hear you on your podcast. Thanks, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, I'm happy you're here. Now, let's start with the easy questions.
All right.
What was it that attracted you to ventriloquism, and how'd you get started?
Well, when I was growing up, we had a lot of ventriloquists on television and commercials, and I watched Jimmy Nelson quite a bit with the Nestle's commercials, the old N-E-S-T-L-E-S, and the dog fart went chunk, his step mouth shut.
Nestle's, right? Nestle's,
right. He inspired me. I watched him. I took books out of the library and read them and practiced, and later on took the Mayer course, which is like the course for ventriloquists. It's kind of like what Tarbell is to magicians.
Yeah.
Mayer is to ventriloquists. And I took the course twice. I took the original mimeograph version, which was very, very old. And I took the new up-to-date one when it came out. So, yeah, I kind of got my grounding that way.
Do you remember your first ventriloquist? What do you call them? Do you call them dummies, dolls? What do you call them?
Well, if they're made out of wood or hard materials, like fiberglass or something, we call them ventriloquist figures.
Okay.
If they're made out of soft material like latex or cloth, we call them puppets.
All right.
I use puppets because the ventriloquist figures scare the bejesus out of little kids sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Do you remember your first one?
First kid show?
No. First puppet or...
It was a guy named Arthur I had. And he had a great big nose. And actually, I was doing, before I did the kid show things, I was doing a lounge act. And this lounge act, he was a drunk dummy that brought him out of a trash can. He was singing. I pulled the trash can open, pulled him out of the trash can. We did a little bit with him. It worked out really well. But then I wanted to use him for the kids show, so we made him just an old guy at that point. He switched gears. He went to AA immediately.
Yeah, a drunk guy at a kids show is no good, right?
No, I was going to say, no, it just doesn't work.
He went to AA. Is that what you said?
Yeah, he went to AA quick.
All right. Well, you and I are kind of kindred spirits because I did a lot of school assemblies also. And that's been has that been your living for the last 35 years or so?
Yeah, it has been. You know, children's shows, kids shows in schools and with the message or a theme to them. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of those. And then libraries in the summertime. Although sure. I used to tour for about 8 years as an opening act for people like Garth Brooks and Reba McEntire and country acts. I did fairs all over the country.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get into all that. That's actually one of my last questions for you.
Okay.
Well, do you have some sort of a secret sauce for your assemblies? Because I know you created a brand new assembly every single year. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, I did. I tried to do things that were curriculum based. And what I would do is, see, I have a background as a teacher. I taught elementary school for 3 years.
Oh, okay.
And so I had kind of an in with teachers and what they were kind of looking for and what principals were looking for kind of going into it. So it helped me a little bit. So I would write these shows, and some would be on social studies, some on math, some on reading. And later on, I did things with good character shows. And that was very important.
Yeah, those are the things that I've done is the No Bully Show. It's something called The Bully Game and character shows. Is there some sort of a formula that you use when you're putting together a new assembly?
Well, I have an outline of what I use. And it works this way. I use a warm-up. I do a puppet at the very beginning of the show. Then I do something in between, like a vocal trick, like a baby cry or distant voice or something. I do one magic trick in the all ventriloquist show just to give my voice a rest. Then I finished with a puppet very strong. So I anchor the show with a puppet on one end, and a puppet on the other end. Then we have what's called a quiet dismissal at the end where I let the kids go back to as quiet as they can. We have a quiet contest. The teachers love that because after you stir them up, you don't just say, I'll see you later and goodbye and walk out the door. I've seen guys do that. Oh my God, the teachers hate your guts.
This is the most important point of anything that you're going to hear today is when you send those kids back to their classes, send them back quietly, because I like you. I've seen people get them all riled up and crazy, and then they go back to class and they're all crazy and drive the teachers crazy. It's wild.
That's right. They want to jump out the window about every second when you're not watching. I've sat through assembly programs. So I was on the other side as a teacher. I sat through assembly programs and, oh my God, will this ever be over with? Because I don't know if I'm ever going to control them by the end of the day or not.
Yeah, exactly.
My whip and chair out and try to get them back like a lion tamer or something. You know, try to get them. Yeah.
Now, have you seen cycles over the years? Like sometimes it's math, sometimes it's bullying, sometimes it's different characters. Have you seen different cycles?
Yeah, what I would do is I went to a lot of principals conferences and had a display booth, and I would talk to principals. And I made friends with a lot of them. Being on the inside, being a former teacher, I got a chance to meet a lot of principals and talk to a lot of them, and they would kind of feed me what was the new thing coming down the track. What's the next big thing that's going to be happening in education over the next year? And they said it's going to be on self-esteem. We're all going to push for self-esteem. So my new show is on self-esteem. The big push is going to be, we have a new curriculum coming on social studies or science. Then I would adapt and write a show to fit that science or social studies thing that they wanted. My show always fit with what they were looking for.
Right.
And that's what kept me busy.
Do you know what they're looking for right now or coming up in the future? Do you have any idea?
Well, right now, I think curriculum, it's kind of a turkey shoot right now a little bit with this, because I don't know where they're going with education. I'm kind of semi-retired now, so I'm not really in the loop as much as I was, but I've got an idea. Anything with character, the anti-drug thing is about worn itself out, I'm afraid. Stranger Danger would still work, but I would think that anything with good character is what they're really looking for right now, because they get enough curriculum stuff. And here's the thing, John. As an elementary teacher, you're supposed to teach so many minutes of social studies every week, so many minutes of math every week, so many minutes of writing. You have different things that you teach, and you have to make those minutes up by the end of the week. Well, if I have a show on good character, and they have to teach that, and it's part of their curriculum, they have to have so many minutes of social of good character that during that week. So by my doing a show that fits that time, I'm helping them make up that. It's not taking time away from the class. I'm adding to their minutes that they have to make up by the end of the week.
Interesting.
So I'm helping them make their minutes.
So if you do a 45 minute show on character, and they have to teach character that day, they can add that 45 minutes to their.
Exactly. They made it 45 minutes or 40 minutes. My shows were about 40. It made up that lesson for that day for them.
Oh, interesting. Now I think of you as more than an event. I think of you as a kid show pro. Because you've lectured and written books and lectured about doing kid shows. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of kid show entertainers listening to this. What are a few things that my listeners can do to improve their kid shows?
Well, the first thing to do is make sure you have a great sound system. If you can't be heard, you can't make the show go. Don't buy something at Radio Shack, the lowest thing you can buy for $3 or, you know, whatever you buy it for. Just don't buy a cheap sound system. Invest in good equipment. Good sound system is very, very important.
Yeah, especially since you're talking to 200-300 kids, right?
Right, right. They get some sound systems that are underpowered, and they might be able to hit the first two or three rows of kids with the sound. The people in the back, you lose them. Once you lose the back of the room, then it starts drifting forward on you, and you lose control. It's all about audience management. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest thing that people can learn, is how to control an audience in a non-disciplinarian way. I mean, you can't stop the show and say, all right, you kids, if you don't straighten up back here in the back, we're going to stop the show, and that's the end of you. Go back to your class. Don't do that.
Right.
I had a principal one time. I'll tell you a funny story. I was getting ready to go on and do my show. It was an inner city school. He said, I got to talk to these kids before you go on. Is that all right? And I said, well, sure, it's your school. Do whatever you like. He walks out and he had his hands on his hips. Right away, I knew there was going to be a problem because he had an attitude.
Sure.
Principal, I said, all right, got you guys. Listen up now. Listen up. Why don't I listen up? Last time we had an assembly, you guys were awful. You yelled, you screamed, you almost booed the guy off the stage. I want you to sit there with your hands in your lap, your mouth closed, all eyes up here. And if you make one peep out of you, I'm going to jerk you out of this room so fast your head's going to spin.
Oh, no.
Have a good time.
Yeah, have fun.
And have a good time. I said, wait a minute. The kids didn't know whether, so we did a warm-up and we got them laughing and clapping. and the principals were smiling. So we knew the kids knew it was okay at that point. So that's what you do, the warm up. You don't waste any of your good material right away. You come out and warm up, get them to be an audience.
Yeah. And you can use the warm up as a subtle way of laying down the rules without actually telling the rules, just by them cooperating with what you're
right. Doing. I always say I'm looking for kids who are sitting up tall and straight, being good right. listeners, that kind of thing.
Exactly. I have a story that's somewhat like yours. When I first started doing this, I used to open with the Magician's Oath, and it would start with something like, "I state your name." And of course the kids say, "I state your name." One of the times I was doing this, a principal actually stepped in front of me and said, "Okay, guys," he meant, "I then say your name." And all the kids got all scared and quiet. And I think it probably took me 5 or 10 minutes to get the kids back into the show and having a fun time.
They're afraid to react.
Yeah, sure. What's your philosophy on keeping the adults entertained? Because not only are you entertaining kids, but you also, if it's a kid's party or something, you have parents in the back. If it's a school, you have teachers. What is your philosophy on the adults?
As far as the adults are concerned, you're there to entertain the kids, and that's good. But you got to throw a joke or two here or there. Not a blue joke that will go over the heads of the kids, just a joke that would be more for the adults. You throw that into your show for the adults, so they know that, you know, there's a few things and there are little tidbits in there for them as well. You got to feed them along with a joke here or there. Just make sure that you're on target with the audience, and they respect the fact that you use people. Don't use teachers out of the audience. I found that's a bad thing to do. I had teachers come up and thank me afterward for not using me. I'm scared to death. They said I can be in front of my class, but I can't be in front of 500 kids at once. So don't bring me up.
Yeah.
And the principal especially, that's a taboo. If you want to get hired back, don't mess with the people that can hire you. That's the teachers and the principal. The kids love the show. And you go out and do things like booger snot jokes all day long, but you'll never get hired back to the school. You know, just you got to make sure you're in tune with the principal and the teachers when you're doing a show, and they enjoy you, how you watch and how you create with the kids. I think that's the big secret.
Last night, I saw a Michael Jackson impersonator, and the coolest thing about his show is that he would bring up kids from the audience at some point in time and do a workshop and teach them the Thriller dance. And it was the best part of the show because all the parents had their cell phones out and they were videotaping. They were recording their children on stage and they were real excited about that. So that involved all the adults too, even though he only had the kids on the stage, all the adults were involved in the show.
Right. Well, like I said, I leave the teachers out of it for a reason, and especially I leave the principal out for a reason. Like I said before, they want the show to be for the kids, but on the other hand, they want to enjoy it too. And they enjoy it by watching the kids enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's talk about your non-kid entertaining. Now, you've appeared on all sorts of TV shows, right?
Right. Good Morning America, CBS Evening News, Real People when it was on.
Oh, yeah. I remember Real People.
Remember that? Real People?
Yeah.
I did that. And Entertainment Tonight. I was on all those shows.
Well, tell us, is there a good story? Tell us the best story about one of your appearances. Do you have a good story in your pocket for that?
I'm trying to think right offhand. There's a lot of good stories. Which one I want to spring on you here?
Without offending anybody.
Yeah, I don't want to make anybody mad. That's not the idea. It's so funny. They'll come and they'll want you to film something, and they'll say, "Can you do that again? Can you do that again? Can you do that again?" And you keep doing it over and over, and they use about one, or they don't even use it in the clip. You watch the clip and all that stuff you did over and over again. They decide not to use it after all. So, I mean, you start going through the paces with them 20 times and then for no reason. I'm saying, why? Why did we do all this?
So, yeah, it ends up on the editing room floor.
Right, exactly. Exactly right. I've also run the International Ventriloquist Convention. I'm the executive director for the Ventriloquist Convention. I run the international deal. When they come in to film us, they're always sometimes looking for an angle. They always like the scary ventriloquist dummy that comes alive, you know, and wants to kill people kind of angle. And they always try to look for that angle. So we have to look to know that we're just an entertainment entity. That's our working tools. Like the magician has their magic props and things that they use. Well, the puppet or dummy, if you want to call it that, that's our working tools. So we have to make sure that they understand that when they come in.
Sure. Well, let's talk about those conventions then. I didn't start going to conventions. I've been in the business for 25 years. I didn't start going to magic conventions until just a few years ago. And I love it. I really love going to conventions. I love the camaraderie of the people, the things we have in common, talking about magic, et cetera. So what are some of the things that people can benefit from going to a vent convention?
Well, the vent convention is called the Vent Haven International Ventriloquist Convention. That's the official full name. Vent Haven is our museum. It's located in Northern Kentucky, close to Cincinnati, a little place called Fort Mitchell. We're just building a brand new, almost $1 million museum right now. It's going to be open next summer.
Wow.
The funds that we make on the convention that are left over after we've paid everybody, we give those donations to the museum to help contribute to the museum to make it grow and keep it in operation. So actually, the Ventriloquist Convention helps the museum. We've worked really hard to do educational programs for the ventriloquists, not just come in and you do your act. That's fun to do that too. We have some open mics that new people can come and try something. We have one particular thing we call the almost like a showcase kind of deal where they come in for the juniors and they have eight of them come on stage one at a time. They'll do a 5 or 6 minute routine. We have ventriloquists that are professionals critique them and give them a verbal critique at the end of it.
Mm.
And then we have what's called the People's Choice Award. They can vote for the ones that they like the best. So we have that with the seniors as well. And in our lectures and workshops, we have them on different topics. It could be anything from kid shows, which I do a lot of times there at the convention, or it could be on performing for cruise ships. It could be performing different venues that you could perform. It might be just on showmanship. It might be on how to do a video, a presentation video for your act. And we got different things that we have.
Do you have one coming up?
Yeah, it's next, July. It comes out in July every year. July 13 to 16, 2022, is called the Vent Haven Convention. We'll be starting that up, probably advertising for that in January.
Great. How can somebody find out about that?
Just go to the venthavenconvention.com.
Okay.
And they can get the information there. It'll be all online by that time.
Now, post-COVID, a lot of the conventions are going virtual. And then the neat thing about that is I'm here in Southern California. I can go to a convention in Georgia by going into my living room and opening up my computer. I can go to a convention in Florida, for example, just by going on my computer. Do you folks have any plans to do that virtually? Or are they all still live?
They're all still live. We did one virtually in 2020. And it was okay. It was fine, but you lose the audience feel. You lose the appeal to the audience, I think, sometimes through Zoom. I mean, it was the next best thing to doing it live,
sure.
But it was still the next best thing.
Yeah.
You need to feed off the audience. That's how your act grows and goes, when you can feed off them and get that experience with them. We had, usually our conventions would run somewhere between 500 and 600 every year. And we've had like 18 to 20 different countries attend.
Oh.
This year we were down just a little bit. We had 425 in person in July this last year.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you opened for some of the biggest acts in country music.
Oh, yeah. I did the fair tour. I love that. I mean, it's a real rush. You walk out and there's 10,000 people in a grandstand watching you. And you go, oh, my God, me and the puppet and 10,000 people. That's really a rush. But I worked with people like Garth Brooks. I have a funny story. I worked with the second largest fair booking agency in the country.
What is the name of that?
It's called Variety Attractions.
Okay.
Anyway, they saw me at a showcase. I was still teaching school at the time. And I had my summers off, so I did a showcase. And I did my time. The agent came up to me that owned the company. I didn't know at the time. Said, you know, you're better than the guys we've been hiring. Have you ever thought about doing this full time? I said, not till now. So he offered me a whole summer's worth of work, 50 fairs.
Woo!
Yeah, different country act, 2 or 3 different country acts every week. He said, I got a brand new act I'm starting out with. I think he's going to go places named Garth Brooks.
Oh, this brand new guy.
Brand new at that time, but he had a following. I didn't realize what kind of following he even had. He had a huge following even at that time. So I went open for him and it worked well. He said, I got somebody else too, a new young lady named Reba McIntyre. And I'd like you to open for her. Here's the funny story about that. The fair was in Virginia and I'd been there the night before and opened for somebody else, Steve Warner, another country act. Anyway, I'd been there and I was out checking the mic and everything, and the bus pulls up, says, Oklahoma Wind, that was the name of her band. Out come all the singers, backup singers. out came one of the singers, and she said, how was the crowd last night? And I said, it was good. She said, are you going to get anything to eat? And I said, I'm walking over to that fair booth and get a hot dog just a minute. You want to come with me? So she walked along with me, and we walked around the fair and came back. And I'd been all afternoon with Reba McEntire. Didn't know it. She had her hair pulled back, a cowboy hat on down low, sunglasses on, no makeup. I mean, I spent the whole afternoon just talking like I'm talking to you. Talk about a real rush.
Okay, I have a little confession. Yeah. I actually haven't even said this on the podcast. When I was younger, I definitely had a little crush on Reba McEntire.
She's great. She's a really, really, really nice lady.
All right, we're going to move on to something called Fact or something John just made up. It's a crazy game show. Sound like fun?
Good. Yeah, I'm up. I'm up for it.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
All right, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to give you a headline, and you tell me if the headline's true or not. And if it is true, tell me a little more about it.
Okay.
Perfect. Here it is. First headline. Mark was a question on Jeopardy.
That is absolutely true.
Oh, really?
It was true. Yeah. They were the name of the category was Puppet Heads. And I was on, Jeff Dunn was one of the questions. Senior Wentz is Edgar Burke, and I was on there. And the question was, who is America's number one children's ventriloquist? And they answered Mark Wade. I don't know how they found that out, but they did some digging. They found out that I was. They won the match for that question.
Were you just watching the show, or did they clear it
beforehand? Actually, I was working in Michigan, driving back to Ohio, where I originally was from. And my son's in college. He calls me, Dad, you've been on television. I said, no, I just came back from Michigan. He said, no, I mean, really, you were a question on Jeopardy. And I found out that way. My son being in his dorm, they watched it and saw me on TV and called me.
Do you have that? Is it on YouTube?
No, I've been trying to find the clip, and they don't keep them. They don't, because they do so many of them. They don't keep. I tried to get back and find it. I'd love to have that clip. What a $1 million clip that would be. But no
kidding. That'd be great to have.
I don't have it. Doggone it.
Dang. All right. Second headline. Mark did all the vent work in the 1978 movie Magic, starring Anthony Hopkins.
That is absolutely false.
Okay.
That movie, along with the Twilight Zone episode, I think set ventriloquism back about 10 years. There. I'm not sure.
It probably did. The Twilight Zone, Cliff Robertson, right?
Cliff Robertson on the Twilight Zone, exactly.
That's right.
He played one, and Jackie Cooper played the other one.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Called Caesar and Me was that episode. Caesar was like, he was dressed like a gangster. He had the black shirt, white tie kind of thing.
Caesar, that's right.
Yeah, Caesar and Me. Anthony Hopkins was wonderful in the role, and I think as just a movie, it was fine. But once again, it was all worn out. Here are the weird ventriloquists, and they believe their dummies are alive kind of deal.
Kind of the standard dark ventriloquist comes alive thing.
Exactly. Puppets come to life and kill people and do things. Yeah, no. Yeah.
When I was a kid, that movie horrified me. It really did. Last one.
All right.
Mark is a past International Ventriloquist of the Year.
That's absolutely true.
True?
Yep.
And tell me about that. How'd that come about?
Well, it comes at our convention. The conventioners vote on a slate of candidates. I was elected to be one of the candidates on it. There was three of us on the ballot that year. And I got the votes from the vents themselves, the professional vents and the amateurs and the wannabes and just the crowd that came to our convention voted me. So every year we had a roast. So that next year they roasted me at the convention. It was a lot of fun to have all the professional vents up on a Diaz up there, you know, cutting into and giving you a hard time in a fun way. That was just a real ball.
Okay, you have to tell me, did the vents slam you, or did the vents have figures that slammed you?
On occasion, with a couple of figures, most of the vents did their own dirty work. They didn't blame on the puppet that time.
That was Fact. Or something John just made up.
Well, this was fun. This is short and sweet. Thanks, Mark, for doing my show. That was really, really fun.
Well, thank you. I appreciate having me, John. Thanks again.
No problem. Do you have any social media or anything you'd like to promote?
Not right now. Like I said, I'm kind of semi-retired. One thing I am doing, I will mention something I'm doing. It's a little bit different. I'm actually doing public speaking now.
Oh.
I'm going out to different groups and doing public speaking. I'm getting more into speaking than I am doing the kids shows anymore. And I like that a lot. I mean, I combine ventriloquism with the public speaking.
Great. So if you want Mark to speak at your event, how would they get a hold of you?
MarkWadeSpeaker@gmail.com.
Perfect.
And website will be coming soon. We'll work on it right now.
Excellent. And thanks to all my variety artists. Tell all your friends about the Variety Artist Podcast. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.